Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Aaron Newcomb joins me. We're going to be talking about Magalix, a way to greatly scale your Kubernetes workloads. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Aaron Newcomb, episode 520, recorded March 6, 2019, Magalix. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by IT Pro TV, providing effective training with access to virtual labs and practice tests. Visit go.itpro.tv/floss to take advantage of their lowest prices of the season. For an additional 30% off for the lifetime of your active subscription, use code FLOSS30 at checkout. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free Libre open source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at StoneEngine.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, little projects, projects you may be using every day and not aware of it, projects you might want to download right after this show and play with, but not while you're in your car. Be sure you get home first. All right, so if you're listening to this in your car, this is not a time to be downloading things, okay? Well, maybe if you're in the back of the car, I guess, if you're not driving. It's probably fine. Joining me once again is my lovely and talented co-host, Aaron Newcomb. Aaron, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Randall. Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
You have different surroundings than we normally see you in. What's the deal?
I know. Isn't it great? I was able to come up to Petaluma because I've got a work gig over in Sonoma. So I was like, hey, you know, I can just like take a little detour, go up to Petaluma, and then go over to work. So I was able to come into the studio for once. It's nice to be back. I used to come in all the time for this show just to be in studio, and then, you know, work and life get in the way.
And I haven't actually done the show from there in, it's got to be 7 years now. It's been a while. It's definitely
really?
Been a while.
It's been that long?
Yeah. Well, remember we had, you and I were in studio with the guy that was doing ZeroMQ.
I
think it's the last time I was there, actually.
Wow.
Back then. No, I did the New Year's Eve show. I think it was like 5 years ago. So I bet that's been longer than 5 years, too. Time just flies and you're having fun.
Yeah, it's still a long time.
I am on Wi-Fi in a hotel in Petaluma. No, not Petaluma. Where am I at? Pasadena. Starts with a P. Has a lot of the same letters, but it's not the same place. I am here this week for Scale, the Southern California Linux Expo. And so I came in a couple days early so I could work with my buddy Captain Neil, who produces InsightCruises.com. And we've been working together to help his website get better and also do some more code for him. I'm having to do a combination of things. I have to do SQL, I have to do Perl, I have to do occasionally CSS. It's like, it's not really my area, but sure enough, it's all working out well. So that's why there's this sort of somewhat messy bed behind me, and I'm checking out this morning after we get done with the show. Anyway, that's enough of that. So we're going to talk today about Magalix. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Magalix, yeah, pretty good. Which is basically a Kubernetes smart manager. Kubernetes, of course, is a big thing now. People are moving to containers, moving to scaling with Kubernetes, moving to being able to build apps that can, different parts of the apps can scale up. My primary client right now is ZipRecruiter, which I'll be at their headquarters next week. Is working to move everything so that instead of having this monolithic image that everybody, in order to scale, you basically get a whole new machine in EC2 or whatever, they're actually moving it so that everything is individual parts so that as the load rises for a particular aspect of the application, the Kubernetes can scale that. And Magalix today is the project. It seems to be a project that can sort of monitor that and do the right thing in terms of scaling and stuff. And I met today's guest, which I didn't put the name anywhere handy. scroll, baby, scroll. All right, hold on.
Mohammed.
Yes, Mohammed. Right. Mohammed. Right. I met Mohammed at the. I kept calling it KubeCon, because it's sort of like in KubeCon did a stately dome decree, right? No, but it's KubeCon. It was KubeCon last December up in Seattle, and I had a great time chatting with him. And he said, "Well, I'll put why not come on the show and talk about that." So That's how it's going to be today. We're going to actually bring him on in just a few minutes. But before that, anything you want to add, Aaron?
No, I mean, this is exciting stuff and very timely as well. So there's, I would just say that there seems to be a, I deal with this all the time at work, obviously. And you know, there seems to be a, two opinions on this, which is one is, wouldn't it be great if we could just get rid of all of this background stuff, right? And do it automatically. And then there's another opinion that says, oh, well, we can't get rid of all of it because we still need to get insights from the infrastructure, i.e. Kubernetes, containers, et cetera. That's kind of powering our development efforts and so forth. So there needs to be like some middle ground where wouldn't it be great if we could automate all of the infrastructure that we're rolling out with containers, but still have enough control that we can see when something goes wrong. And so it seems like that's where Megalix, if I'm saying that right.
We'll find out in a minute.
It seems like that's like where they're playing is, hey, we're going to automate this and hopefully, you know, enable you to scale up your applications faster and hopefully provide more performance when you need it. So I'm really curious to see how they get about that and how do they know exactly when to scale, right? What are those pointers that that they're taking in to know, okay, we need to roll out more containers for this application so that you don't over provision as well, because that's a problem. When you get your bill from AWS, you're like, whoa, is this so big? And it's like, oh, well, we spun up a lot of containers or instances that we didn't need or at the end of the day, or we had over-provisioned. So anyway, that's my thoughts going into this.
And I also want to apologize to the audience. I've been fighting a head cold and a chest cold for the last couple of days. So my throat's probably a little more scratchy than it normally is. And you may actually hear me coughing a couple of times, but I'm here to do the show. So that's how it's going to work. But before we start the show, before we bring him on, let's go ahead and talk about a very important topic, because this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by IT Pro TV, experienced IT professionals who deliver comprehensive training at the click of your mouse. Spring is almost here, and there has never been a better time than now to take advantage of their lowest prices ever. Purchase a standard membership, video only, for $28.50 a month. Upgrade to a premium membership, video plus labs and practice tests, for $42 a month. But wait, you can save even more. IT Pro TV is still honoring our special offer, 30% off for all TWIT listeners. Dropping the standard membership to only $19.95 a month or $199 a year, and the premium to $29.50 a month or $295 a year. Stream IT Pro TV's courses live and on demand worldwide. Chromecast, Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, PC, or their iOS and Android apps. New content is added daily, so your training is always aligned with the latest certifications and the most current exams. IT Pro TV is CompTIA's official video training partner. 12 CompTIA on-demand courses, CompTIA A+, Network Plus, and Security Plus certs. Visit go.itpro.tv/floss to get started with your standard or premium membership today. Don't let another season pass you by without earning your IT certifications. That's go.itpro.tv/floss and use the code FLOSS30 for an additional 30% off for the lifetime of your active subscription. IT Pro TV, flexible training, binge-worthy content, life-changing results. And we thank IT Pro TV for their sponsorship of Floss Weekly. And now let's go ahead and bring on our guest, Mohammed. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Great to be with you.
And where are you speaking to us from?
I'm now speaking from Cairo. We are based in Seattle, but I'm just visiting Cairo these days.
Cool. And so how close did we get in trying to describe what Megalix is about? Why don't you give us a 30,000-foot view? What problem are you solving with Megalix?
First of all, you pronounced it right. It's Megalix.
Oh, good. Okay, good. I got that one. Yeah.
All right. So that's and actually also you got it right in terms of what we're trying to do. We are basically building a low-touch continuous optimization for Kubernetes that will allow developers and teams to realize the savings 10x faster and save up to 50% of their cloud bill. And we use machine learning to achieve all of that. This is what we do in a nutshell.
Tell me about machine learning. How is that impacting this?
So machine learning is engaged at different levels. The first one is, rather than doing reactive kind of scalability for the infrastructure and containers, we try to do it in a proactive way. So if you're running your application, you know, in a fairly stable environment, and you know that there is a weekly or maybe daily pattern of your usage, you want to have your infrastructure and capacity go with that. So let's say in the morning, 8 a.m. to 10 a.m., you get a spike, and then the rest of the day, maybe things get a bit slower. You want to make sure that you have the right infrastructure or the right capacity during those 2 hours, and you don't want to keep that infrastructure provision for the rest of the day. You can wind down parts of it and make sure that moving forward, you're efficient all the time. So being proactive on that and learning the pattern is the first part where the machine learning piece get engaged. The second part is when basically the system tries to understand the correlations between different matrix. So if I scale container number one, and that container, you know, is going to keep up. Do I need to keep up with those, users' workloads? Do I really need to scale up other containers in the background or not? So rather than for the developer or the DevOps guy to add all the rules, all the complex rules around, you know, each one of those containers independently, and then they would need to really go through them every few weeks, those rules are generated automatically, and the dependencies are identified using machine learning. So that's the second part. And then the last part, you know, think of it again as the autopilot. If the AI made a recommendation or decision that is not really right for that particular workload, how can the AI or how can that scalability really roll back and give control back to the humans or, you know, to the users? A nice analogy that we usually give it is, think of Magalix as the autopilot. Pretty much use that analogy that kind of an example. The commercial flights, they would have the autopilot, and it's for sure the human pilots can take the whole trip end to end by themselves. But the reason that they use the autopilot, because there are so many variables that they need to take care of during that long flight. And at a certain point, the human pilot does not really need to take care of or keep monitoring all of these. So the autopilot can take care of, you know, the simple stuff and reduce the cognitive overhead from whoever, you know, driving the plane or flying the plane at that time. So we're doing the same thing for cloud infrastructure. We want to basically make it easy to scale up and down the infrastructure based on parameters that are coming from or starting from the user workloads all the way to the infrastructure.
And so how did this get started?
I'll share with you our story. So I worked at AWS, I worked at Azure, and I really enjoyed working with such gigantic infrastructure at both companies. And 4 years ago, I moved into a company called Climate Corporation. It's in digital agriculture, and I was responsible for all their cloud infrastructure. They were one of the largest customers at AWS. And frankly, when I moved at that side of the fence, at the other side of the fence, I saw the dark side of the cloud adoption, if you will. First day in the job, my manager asked me two questions. Are we efficient? Are we moving fast? Went back again to him after 24 hours, the answer was no, we're not efficient. We're not really getting the best return on investment. So we kickstarted a six-month project, and we say, okay, we want to really make sure that we're making a good job in terms of how much value we're getting out of our infrastructure. We did, we did our homework, through looking at matrix, looking at our spending. We winded down big parts of our infrastructure. At the end of the 6 month, we really celebrated. Everything was great, and I was ready to take my bonus. 4 weeks after that, we just regressed back, and we scratched our head. We kept asking ourselves what really happened there, and it was a very simple reason. Our developers just released a new version of our software. They want to make sure that they're really having the right amount of infrastructure and ready for that new release. So they simply over-provisioned. So We went back again to the whiteboard, optimized again, and then in 3 months, we went back to the green, but we regressed back. So we were going through different cycles of, you know, success, failure, and so on. Basically, I asked myself, you know, that question, are we just a bunch of idiots, or is it a common problem that everyone would have? And I went and I talked to people in the community. I talked to people from Nordstrom, Starbucks, Netflix, and I was just asking them that basic question. Hey, guys, are you facing that problem that we're going through and going through that endless cycle of optimize and monitor and so on? And they said, well, yes, it's definitely this is what is happening with us. And we keep juggling between different tools and different rules and matrix to really optimize our infrastructure. And from that point, I asked myself and my co-founder, I came across my co-founder at that time, Omar, and we asked ourselves, can we really make this much easier than before, especially with the emergence of containers and Kubernetes? That was around the year 2015, and containers was a big thing at that time, and Kubernetes was just getting started. And I was asking in the community, hey, guys, when are we going to get that day where we – the users or the developers just, push their containers and they do not really need to think about the VMs, the size of the VM or the amount of CPU and memory. And I did not get a definitive answer. And from that point, we said, okay, I think this is a big opportunity to really push a big value to the community, by reducing the overhead, managing such a, the capacity and taking a look at the matrix, et cetera. And that's basically our founding story.
So I've got a question because I was just looking on the website as you were talking, and I don't see any mention of open source. So I mean, since this is Floss Weekly, I think the first question I should ask is, where does open source come into the picture?
That's a good question. So our work actually composed of two parts. There's the agent part, which is the piece that sits on the user cluster, and there's the back end part that helped that agent to operate properly. The agent is the open source piece. The back end is not open source yet. And the agent itself, we open source our agent last November for two main reasons. Number one, we wanted to, provide our, the users a transparency of, this is exactly the matrix that the Magalix reads. This is what basically need to be done for the agent to run properly. And just to prove that there is no need to access any user data or customer data. We work at the system level, at the Kubernetes API level. And we had another goal in mind, is gradually to make the agent work independently from our back end and give some value to the community around capacity management inside Kubernetes. We wanted Magalix agent to be just an installable piece or installable pod that can do the basic capacity management for you without necessarily depending on Magalix. We said, let's open source that. Make sure that everyone is familiar with it and gradually roll out that plan and make sure that that the agent, get plugged nicely into the Kubernetes ecosystem.
Yeah, yeah. Is the plan to open source the backend piece eventually, or is that TBD?
That's TBD for one main reason. The main driver of all of that is the data itself, and the data belongs to the users. We do not want to upset and cross the boundary where the data, gets in the wrong hands. So we're still trying to do some engineering work in the background to make sure that we can actually expose that backend as an open source project without the current heavy dependency on each user data.
Okay, that's a fair answer, I think. If the agent is open source, though, would there be a way for me to use the agent to take the agent and use it with a different backend? Would you be okay with that?
Right now, not at the moment. We're actually working to make it work with Prometheus. Hopefully within the next few weeks, we're going to have a new release of our agent where it can interface with Prometheus. Right now, it interfaces with our backend as the main source of the matrix. But over time, it's going to be 100% compatible with Prometheus.
So oh, that's great news.
Which is the official monitoring.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And that's exactly, you read my mind. That's exactly why I asked, or one of the reasons I asked, is because, you know, I talk to, IT ops guys all the time that are living in this space, and they love mm-hmm. having their open source tools, right? I mean, it's actually growing, the open source community around containers and Kubernetes specifically, is really, really strong. And people like, especially Prometheus is a great example. They want that interaction, the ability to show the data when they need it to see what's going on. So I think it's great that you're actually working on that integration. What kind of traction are you seeing? Like, you know, how is this growing? How's the product growing? What companies are using it? Where are you seeing it implemented? Where are you seeing it having success right now?
Absolutely. So right now, we have a SaaS freemium model. Anyone can just go to magalaxy.com. You can register with one command line. You can install the agent. And within a few minutes, the matrix will be flowing. Within a few hours, you're going to see recommendations with full analysis of your containers and how much capacity they're using. Right now, most of our users are coming from small to medium-sized companies where the DevOps function is handled almost by everyone. And this is where we see a lot of value being provided to the team and to the company. You do not have a dedicated DevOps engineer, yet it's a task or it's a duty that everyone or someone needs to do it, which is managing the capacity of the cluster. You do not really need to, at that point, once you install the agent, you do not really need to babysit your cluster to a large extent. Just one quick thing to mention here, there are two pieces or two parts of it. There's the recommendation part and there's the execution part. You can go ahead and run Magalix for free, Magalix agent for free, and you can get all the recommendations that you need. But at a certain point, you can actually upgrade your account and you can turn those recommendations into actual decisions, which means that the agent will go ahead and execute those for you. And actually, we have what's so-called the autopilot button. Once you turn this on, basically the agent is going to go ahead and execute those recommendations for you. And you can control the frequency. It can be done every hour in terms of how frequently you really want your cluster to go up and down. Or you can reduce that and make it daily, weekly, et cetera. Whatever that works or makes sense to your team and your business.
So I'm just thinking about this architecturally. So the agent sits at the cluster level, is that correct?
Yep.
Okay. And then you're able to, the agent is collecting data back to the back end. The back end is doing the ML, right? And it sounds like you're kind of doing some baselining. We talk about this all the time at AppDynamics when we're monitoring applications, is setting those baselines. And then based mm-hmm. on the baselines, if you're above or below the baselines, then the agent is actually, you can communicate back to the agent, have it take the action to add more containers or remove containers as the case may be. Is that an accurate depiction of the architecture?
Yes, it does two things. There's the vertical or horizontal scalability of your containers. So if you're going to do the vertical, which is basically same container, but you want to add more memory or CPU, or you want to add, this is the vertical, the horizontal is to basically add more replicas to it. You can control that, and of course, it depends on your architecture. At the moment, this is a manual process, is to say, well, I want this container to be for the ML to consider only vertical scalability for that container, and then the ML will take care of the rest in terms of what would be the proper values, and also for the horizontal scalability for some of your containers. And that's basically what takes place in the background. Right now, we do it by default every hour for you. So every single hour, they're going to be a big or comprehensive wave of scanning for your cluster and containers and workloads, and then generating recommendations. Those recommendations are for the next 1 or 2 hours. So let's say at 10 a.m., the agent will scan all your cluster. It's sending the matrix anyways every minute. The ML will decide based on that and based on the history, I see that there is a bottleneck that is forming in some parts of the cluster. So for the next hour, I need to allocate more memory or more CPU for that container and maybe increase the replicas of that container and so on. And then based on that, in 30 minutes, for example, 1 hour from that analysis time, those are going to be executed ahead of any, you know, anticipated changes in the workloads.
Great. That's you're anticipating all of my questions. I love this, the horizontal vertical scaling. That was going to be the next thing I asked. So in terms of the baselining, how far out do you go? What kind of time periods are you looking at? Is it hour of the day, day of the week, you know, day of the month, day of the year, that kind of thing? Or is it purely predictive into, hey, here's, you know, we're starting to ramp up here, so we're going to give you this recommendation, you know, based on what we project for the next, just like you said, for the next few hours?
Yeah, got it. That's a good question. And that's actually also bring the challenge of managing the scalability. When you think about managing this capacity of your cluster, typically the engineer would look at different resolutions of their matrix. They would look at the 1 minute, 5 minutes, 1 hour, and so on. And the reason that they're doing this is because they want to see things taking place at different times. You might be having daily patterns. You know, every time in the morning, you might be getting a typical spike. You might get weekly patterns. Maybe, you know, over the weekend, there is a certain spike for whatever the reason is. And then we might get seasonal patterns. And based on that, the engineers usually, or the DevOps, would calculate how much capacity they need. And, you know, the main reason for over-provisioning in general, that they calculate the maximum for all of these. And they say, okay, I'm going to just provision the maximum that would take me through all those spikes, whether they're daily or weekly, et cetera. What Magalix does is pretty much the same thing. We collect the matrix at 1 minute resolution. However, we downsample this 1 minute all the way to 12 hours. And the ML actually works at all those six resolutions. Those six resolutions are basically allow the ML to look at the different patterns if there's something happening on a daily basis or every few hours, if there's something happening every few days, weeks, etc. And obviously, the more you run your application or the more matrix Magalix backend or the ML would have, you know, the more further in the future it can look and the more patterns it can capture, if you will. So that's basically how it works in the background at the moment.
Yeah, that's great. And then how do you extend that out? Well, first of all, let me ask another question first, actually, in terms of events and metrics that you're collecting to make these decisions. I may have missed it earlier on when you were describing the, you know, overall how it works, but what data points are you actually taking into account? Is it only application load data points? Is it response times? Is it resource constraints in terms of CPU and memory? What data points are you actually tracking to be able to make those recommendations?
Absolutely. So right now we collect the basic system level matrix like CPU, memory, network, disk, etc. And we collect some variations of that. So for example, we collect the CPU and we collect the CPU throttling matrix. And we use them together to estimate how much CPU you're going to use. This is the level that we're working at right now. Hopefully, as we move on to the next level of optimization, we would like to introduce more application level matrix. So, for example, let's assume that you're exposing an HTTP endpoint, and you want to make sure that there's a certain level of service level, certain latency, if you will, ideally the ML actually should be looking at this, and based on that, it actually decides on how much resources it needs. So right now we're only working at the system level, but hopefully over time, as we get that compatibility with Prometheus, we're going to start looking at the application level matrix.
Okay. And then you may have mentioned this. I don't remember that. Who's using it today? Like, how many customers do you have? What's your largest customer? Because I am concerned also about scale. It seems like from the way you described it, it should scale fairly reasonably. But, you know, what's your biggest, if you know, I mean, sometimes you don't know, what's your biggest implementation right now in terms of scale?
Yep. So the biggest connected cluster right now with running with a single agent is around 900 nodes. That cluster is dynamic. It ranges from 400 to 900 nodes, depending on the workload that they're having or, you know, throughout the day. And actually, that was a challenge for us to run a single agent for a cluster that big. But we managed actually to fix a few bugs here and there, and actually it's working fine. And we can manage clusters as small as three machines. From an economic perspective, you want to really have something that is thin. The sweet spot is something, a cluster that is 10 nodes or more. Anything below that, the management, the capacity management of the cluster is not really a big issue. You can still use the agent, you can still install it. But the sweet spot, I would say somewhere between 50 and 100 nodes, where it becomes a really big overhead, few hours, every couple of days to make sure that your cluster is really efficient. Once you go beyond 100 or 200 nodes, that's definitely that's a no-brainer, I would say, for the users to use something like Magavex.
So I wanted to jump in here for a minute or two. So what is this written in? I'm guessing Go, just because everything around Kubernetes seems to be in Go. Am I right?
Yes. Agent itself is in Go. The core pipeline is in Go. The ML, though, is in Python.
Okay. Well, so there's two languages I don't know. Python and Go. But that's fine. That's perfectly fine. As you're designing this, you must also have you must have some sort of key value stores or database to be able to deal with the record. You said you're recording over 12 hours at 1 second intervals or something like that. Maybe 1 minute intervals. So I might have misheard. Yep. Where is that data being stored?
So right now we use a suite of tools. We're definitely all open source. So we use InfluxDB. We use Prometheus itself. We're running on top of Kubernetes, and you'll be surprised that we're definitely using the agent to optimize the Kubernetes cluster. So everything that we have is Kubernetes. Using Kubernetes itself. So we run the agent to optimize for itself. So the agent is running on the cluster that is hosting our backend, and we optimize for ourselves. And that was, a core, a core rule for us, dogfooding our own stuff and making sure that we're solving the scalability issues for ourselves. Just don't tell anyone. Sometimes we get some downtimes because we're not able to keep up. But we're using InfluxDB. We're using again Prometheus, all in Go language, and of course, MongoDB. Those are the main technologies that we're using in our backend.
And how are you with the community? Is there a community outside of your company yet that is contributing patches and stuff to this?
So far we get sporadic kind of contributions to our agent. We're actually trying to streamline this. Right now, most of the contributions that we get are in a form of bugs, and issues that get filed against the agent, and some ideas around what need to be done. I think the once we are 100% compatible with Prometheus, things will accelerate at that space. Right now, we're open to any issues, any bugs that get reported. Of course, anyone can contribute to the code base, but I think it's going to be more active once we get into Prometheus, Sphere in general.
And have you been able to contribute to the Prometheus space in terms of either bug fixes or feature requests?
We actually did a Kubernetes. One of the features that we discussed with a few engineers in Seattle is the what's so-called in-place vertical auto-scaling. One of the key limitations right now in Kubernetes is the if you would like to vertically scale your container, add more CPU memory, you will have to restart it. And that's a big limitation. Some containers you don't really want to restart them, especially if you want to just add more CPU power to them. So that group, has been working on that feature, and we're trying to really support this feature, either with or without Magavex. We are mainly focused on Kubernetes and how Kubernetes is actually executing the capacity management in general more than Prometheus. We believe Prometheus is way advanced in handling matrix. And the challenge is not in how you measure and store and visualize the matrix. The challenge is how you take insights from those matrix and execute the recommendations in a clean way on top of Kubernetes. And that's what we would like to see more contributions at, either from Magilex or from others. That's an area that definitely need more attention.
And I'm sort of curious, so the why is this not just something that's monitoring the load average and spinning things up as needed? What's more complex about the problem than that?
Well, two things. The complexity comes from, number one, setting up the pipeline. Right now, you can do that without Magilex. You can actually set up the horizontal pod autoscaler, which is, you know, an open source piece that that you can use, in vertical pod autoscaler. But you need to set up Prometheus. You need to know have enough history of your data. You need to set up the rules, the scalability rules. You know, how much CPU and memory should you add when you get a certain amount, a certain workload, and so on. So there is a lot that need to be done. Certainly, I see lots of engineers doing that. But the problem is, it's not a fire and forget thing. We need to really keep up with this on a weekly or biweekly basis. And every time you need to do this, you know, to maintain your rules and scalability rules, you need to, you know, take a look at so many metrics. And what we're trying to do is just take all that overhead. There are way more important stuff that, you know, engineers want to do inside the clusters rather than you just looking at matrix and just adding or editing rules. So the challenge is in how much time and the cognitive overhead that you need to go through or have to really achieve that. You can still do it without Magilex. That's fine. And I see lots of teams doing it. But do you really want to spend a few hours every week, or you just do it in 5 minutes and then it automatically take care of that for you and you get detailed reports on, you know, your capacity optimization and how much you could save, for the next few weeks?
Okay, and so the pattern recognizer. So yeah, that was good. So the sort of pattern recognizer that is, you know, recognizing that, you know, at 10 a.m. we have this spike and this happens Monday through Friday. Are there ways that the engineers, the operators can provide hints to say, we know that next Friday is a holiday, so it won't have that same pattern?
That's a great point. One of our customers is in e-commerce, and they were basically mentioning the Black Friday. They would say, well, your ML never saw the Black Friday. Let's say I'm a customer with you for 3 months, and you know the Black Fridays of 2019 is not going to be like 2018. How the ML is really going to save the day for me? And the short answer for this, we will like to provide a dial at the end of the day saying, well, you know what, I'm expecting to have double the workload on my system. You know, can Magilex do the rest or the needful for me? So rather than going through, you know, the tens and tens of containers that you may have in your infrastructure and adjusting the rules for all those containers, is pretty much, much more abstract way to say, this is what Black Friday means for me. And then the ML will take care of everything. So this is something that, you know, we've been collecting feedback from users about to basically, make it up when the ML, miss a certain event or when engineers or whoever is running the cluster knows that what is upcoming, never seen before. It's not a typical pattern. And of course, if there's a pattern that is already taking place, but the ML is not able to capture, this is also another piece that we are, you know, it's upcoming in the pipeline where you can basically train it and pinpoint some, basically create a calendar for the ML telling it, hey, during that time, I know this is going to be, a really downtime or a slow time for me. Please make sure that I do not exceed, let's say, 30% of my capacity.
Okay, and now let me ask probably a couple of stupid questions because, okay, I know what Kubernetes sort of is. We're talking about containers. We're talking about containers scaling up. Yeah, bear with me for a second. Are those containers, those must be Linux containers, right? And is it Docker that's doing that or is it something else?
So you mean how? What is the workflow to expand or to add more capacity or take capacity from those containers? Is this your question?
Yeah, I think I'm trying to ask that, but the real question I want to ask, I'll just ask that, and then you can answer that real question, which is, what do you need to add to the containers that are being spun up in order for Megalix to work? Is there like a Megalix agent that needs to be monitoring everything inside?
Nothing. There's no change that is needed for, you know, in your source code or any of your containers. We do not actually work at inside the container. We work at the outside of the container, how much resources the system is going to get to your container. And this is basically what we're trying to do. And that makes what we do is compatible with any programming language. It does not require any prior knowledge about what is inside the container. We basically just deal with it as a black box.
Okay, that sounds cool. And what's on your roadmap? What are you still missing that you want to create? I know you were talking about open sourcing some of the back end stuff. What else is on your roadmap coming up soon?
So right now, let's take it. So right now we support major cloud providers. We support AWS, Azure, Google, and IBM. A couple of others are in the pipeline. And we would like to support on-prem. We see lots of users right now, according to some statistics, around 40% of Kubernetes users are running it on-prem. And we would like to support on-prem scenarios. Now, the on-prem is a bit challenging because it's easy to scale up and down the container within the Kubernetes cluster. But when you try to do it at the next level, which is scaling up and down the number of the VMs or the size of the VM itself, now it depends on the framework that the user is using, underneath Kubernetes itself. For the major cloud providers, it's a straightforward thing. We just use their APIs to ask for a new VM or, just deprovision an existing VM. So that's one piece on the roadmap. The other one, as I touched on, is the business level KPIs as the main driver for capacity management. Right now, we use only system level, CPU, memory, etc. But what we would like to do is enable users to point the ML to specific matrix and say, this matrix is my key indicator, and make sure that everything else will meet my goal here. If I would like to have average latency half a second for that HTTP endpoint, just make it happen. So that's another piece. And of course, open sourcing and making sure that it's easy for others, open sourcing the more and more of our pipeline and making sure that others can run the technology from our current backend model. It's still that particular piece is a bit tricky because, as I mentioned, ML is not about the code or the model; it's about the data and the training that you. The training process that you use to make sure that your models are really accurate. So we're still learning about that. We're still learning from our own experience and trying to, over time, push that to the community and make sure that the community will benefit from that without too much of an overhead that the user would get with this package.
So I'm just taking a look at your pricing as well. I mean, and you just answered my next question, right? Which is, are you going to support on-prem? Of course. We seem to be in sync here. I don't know what's going on between Petaluma and Cairo, but I did want to ask about security and whether that's a concern, because that also plays into customers who want to keep, their infrastructure on-prem, right? And it's mostly for security reasons, right? How do you tackle that question with customers when they're like, yeah, I want to use this product, but, we have concern about what kind of data is flowing in and out of your controller, for example.
We have an experimental model right now, which is what we call it, the enterprise version of Megalix. And that particular piece is basically allowing you to get the whole thing installed within your data center or within your VPC. We're still experimenting with a couple of customers where, you know, in that model, you send and install the agent, but rather than the agent sending to our, you know, own backend, we basically install a replica of MagicX on your inside your infrastructure, and the agent just does the communication internally. Nothing to be really pushed outside your data center. So this is still an experimental feature. I think it's doable, but you know, there's some rough edges that we're working on.
Okay. And then what about private cloud? Like, what if I wanted to, and this may be the exact same answer actually, but what about, you know, Pivotal Cloud Foundry or OpenShift or, you know, platforms like that where you know, they've kind of baked this into the platform? Would it work on those platforms or no?
Yeah, right now we're only experimenting with OpenShift. Definitely the others are on the roadmap. We're just getting started with it. So we're testing the model in general. Once we make sure that the model is actually something that many customers or many users would need, we're definitely going to invest in others, you know, being compatible with any, you know, any, you know, private cloud infrastructure, Azure Stack, Cloud Foundry, et cetera.
Okay. And then I guess the last question from me, just to be fair to everybody else that's watching this, who may not be familiar with the landscape. I mean, who are you competing against? I guess it seems like I read about a startup that's doing this almost every day. There's a new startup that's coming out and trying to tackle this problem. I mean, who are your biggest competitors in the space, and what do you do differently that they don't do?
Got it. So our competition comes from different areas. Definitely the direct competition is from startups who are trying to optimize for Kubernetes specifically. There are some really well-respected companies in this, like Turbonomics, Cloud Health, CloudAbility. They're all trying to you know, tackle the same problem. The main differentiation, I would say, from us between us and them is, if you think of us, I would say we are the Stripe version of the cloud capacity management. Most of those solutions would require a heavy kind of heavy or complicated process to enable them, install them, and make sure that they're running properly inside your infrastructure. For us, if you go and register, it's just once you register, one command line, copy and paste inside your console or cluster console, and then you're up and running. So that's number one. We wanted to make it really easy for anyone to adopt the solution. The second distinction is how fast you get those recommendations. Most of the other companies would basically wait until they accumulate enough data so that they give you recommendations based on 2 weeks or maybe 4 weeks data that they collect specifically about your cluster. But one of the goals that we had in mind at the beginning is how can we really make this 10x faster? Rather than waiting for days and weeks, can we really give those recommendations in a few hours? And then over time, the model will adjust itself. And that's actually what we have right now. Once you run that command, a few minutes, you get the matrix, and then in a few hours, you get the recommendations. Maybe those recommendations are based on the short history that we've seen, but over time, we start generating some predictions or forecasts for your matrix, and then give you the recommendations. And that takes me to the third and final distinction that I would like to mention here, which is the proactive nature of our scalability decisions or recommendations. Again, rather than waiting for stuff to happen, and then we say, oh, your infrastructure now need to keep up with your users, we would like to make sure that we're accurate as much as possible in our workloads and anticipation. And based on that, we proactively scale your infrastructure and containers.
So one more question. I know we're kind of probably running out of time here, but how do you ensure that accuracy? Right? How do you know that your algorithm and the way that you implement it is better than your competitors, I guess? And then also, how do you come back to, how do you back up these proof points on your website? You said 10x faster and 50% savings in the cost of cloud infrastructure. So 10x faster, I'm assuming is that a performance of your application? Like, how do you back those numbers up?
That's a good point. So, Let me answer the first question first. How do we guarantee the accuracy of our models? From an abstract perspective or abstract sense, it's very simple. Every time we generate a recommendation and generate an a future metric. We measure it against the actual. And this is part of our secret sauce. The ML actually not only generate decisions, but also takes a feedback about what it predicted and the recommendation that it generated. Every time is a miss, we basically accumulate this in the back end, in a special store. And at a certain point, we basically fire up a retraining that is specific to that user. So we have month worth of data that we use to train our initial models. And when you run for the first few hours, you use those basic models. And then after, those recommendations are being generated, and when the ML sees that, hey, there is something special about this container, that specific cluster, it basically branches itself and generate a specific model to that user and continuously, train itself in the background. So this is, for the first question. For the second one regarding the 50% and 10x, apologies if the 10x is not really clear, but what we meant by 10x is how fast you can really realize the value of the savings and recommendations. As I mentioned, rather than waiting for 2 weeks to run a tool and get the result of that tool or the optimization results of that tool, we wanted to basically make sure that the developers would be able to see it in a few hours. They can really see the value of those recommendations really fast. So this is what we meant by 10x faster in terms of value of realization. The 50%. It's basically by the reports that we provide in the dashboard. If you go to our dashboard, just install the agent and go to your dashboard, you're going to see the estimated savings, when those recommendations are applied. And we actually transparently share all the, we share all the, the back logic and how we calculate the savings for the user. So 50% saving is the average case. Sometimes if you're really efficient from the beginning, there might be less than that. We've seen in some with some clusters and some users, it can be up to 65%. And that's relative, of course, depending on how much you're over-provisioned in your cluster. So the average case is around 50%. That's why we mentioned it on the website.
Now, we're almost out of time, so just got a couple more questions before we finish. Am I correct at the beginning of the show when I said I met you at KubeCon? Is that where I met
you? Yes, exactly. Yeah.
All right, good. I was trying to figure out where it was. I knew it was something about Kubernetes, but I couldn't remember exactly where because I go to so many conferences now these days.
We were lucky. We became Google partners at that time, and Google was sponsoring us at KubeCon. Yeah. We were there, and we met you. We were lucky enough.
Cool. And then you interviewed me for something up there, right? Wasn't there a little video thing you did?
Yes. We made a funny video about Kubernetes. Happy to share it and maybe, post it after that with the rest of the community. It's about, some trivia, questions about Kubernetes and some fun stuff, to be shared with the community.
Right. And I think I actually even brought up that I thought it was KubeConf instead of a KubeConf because it just sort of looks like that. But I don't know, maybe I didn't bring that up. I brought that up on the show a number of times, so that's probably where I keep thinking of it. Anyway, so is there anything we didn't ask that you want to make sure our audience is aware of before we have to let you go?
I think you ask all the questions. I really strong everyone to really give it a try, give us the feedback. We're still an early stage startup. We know that we have a lot to learn from the community, from our users. And the main goal here is to just make sure that, we're giving back time to the developers and the DevOps to do the stuff that they really love to do on their infrastructure. Kubernetes and containers is exciting technology. You can do a lot with it. But you can easily get dragged into, mundane jobs of capacity management that can easily be automated. And that's what we're trying to do here.
Sounds good. So, and also, are you more of a programmer type or a manager type?
I'm a mix between this and that. In a startup, you wear all the hats, right? So maybe at night, I'm a developer.
Okay.
Morning.
Okay. Then I have two more questions. I have two more questions for you. Then.
Sure,
what's your favorite programming language?
Go. Go Lang.
Go. Okay, well, that's fine. And what text editor do you spend all day in?
Visual Studio Code.
All right, Visual Studio Code. You know, we're going to have them on the show soon. I keep getting promised that somebody from Microsoft is going to actually be on the show about that thing, because I'm using it all day now too, which is really, really amazing, because I'm an very old time Emacs user. But when I started getting into Dart and Flutter, Visual Studio Code with its IDE was so beautiful and so easy to use and so fast and much better than Android Studio and much better than anything else sort of in that arena. So I love Visual Studio Code. It's just an amazing thing that, you know, it's been such an amazing turnaround, a 480 degree turnaround by Microsoft from 20 years ago from the Halloween memo to now, where they really are embracing open source and stuff. So I'm really happy about that. So I want to make sure to get them on the show really soon. So we'll get it to happen. Anyway, thank you for coming on and talking about Magalix, and appreciate the time you're taking out of the day to be able to do that. And I'm sure more people will be downloading it right after this show and playing with it.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it, Randall. Thank you very much, Aaron, for the interesting discussion, the questions, and happy to answer any questions that you may get from your audience over whatever channel that you prefer.
Very cool. Very cool. Aaron, what do you think?
Yeah, this is good stuff. I mean, this is exactly what's needed in the industry right now, is something to automate, right? It's kind of the last pillar at AppDynamics. We talk about visibility, insight, and action, right, as the three pillars of what we do, which is monitoring applications and infrastructure. Mm-hmm. But, it's really that action piece that's been lagging, and it's an enabler for SREs and IT ops folks, right, so that they don't have to worry about it quite as much. You still have to worry about it. Like I said, you can't completely say, well, we're just going to flip the switch and everything's just going to run, right? You still want your reports. You still want to look at your dashboards. You still want to ensure that the automated actions you're taking are happening. But in this case, for Kubernetes, it really can become a big headache and costly as well. There was a quote from Gartner, and this was an estimate in their case, but they estimated something like $200 billion were at risk because people didn't have proper monitoring of their applications and infrastructure in the cloud. So there's a huge amount of money involved across the board for making sure that people are able to keep up with those cost overruns and make sure they don't happen. It can be a real game changer for a company and a competitive differentiator as well, keeping your costs under control.
Cool. Yeah. And this is definitely an interesting area, because I know, like I said, ZipRecruiter is moving everything to cloud, Kubernetes, all that stuff, and trying to scale things separately and going to 12-factor and stuff like that. And it's funny, one of the meetings has a meeting notes that get sent out every week, and they've listed it as 0x12FA, as if that's 12-factor. But that's actually a huge hex number. So it's like nothing to do with 12 factors anymore. And then there's also the other joke, which I really like, which is I mixed up two-factor authentication with 12-factor apps, and now I can't log in. It's just like, I can't get online at all. Anyway, let's talk about who's coming up. Nobody new since last week. But, man, what a flurry of activity in the last couple of weeks. So it's really cool. Next week is going to be a Flexera Open Source Report. That's the annual vulnerability survey by Secunia Research. We're going to be talking about various problems with open source software. So that's pretty cool. Railroader, which is a security static analysis tool for finding vulnerabilities in applications that use Ruby on Rails. I guess a few people still use that. Fluid Keys, which builds on OpenPGP and makes it easy to implement great security across your organization. Edisync, which is secure end-to-end encryption and privacy regarding respecting sync for your contacts, calendars, and tasks. Very cool. Mycroft, which is the world's first open source assistant. Well, they're claiming it's that. I don't know if that's actually true, but whatever. Well, we'll go with what they're saying first. So it's basically think of Alexa and Siri and things like that, but all open source. So it'll run on almost every level of computer, like Raspberry Pis all the way up to your automobile, things like that. So it should be pretty cool. Ionic, which is a free open source mobile UI toolkit for developing high quality cross-platform apps for native iOS, Android, and the web, which would be pretty interesting, all from a single code base. Yeah, yeah. And also, as a Flutter advocate, I'm definitely going to be looking forward to that show to really sort of, you know, figure out what the differences are and why, because that's JavaScript. I'm pretty sure it's not Dart. Dart's a much better language. But okay, I said that out loud, didn't I? All right. I'm allowed to say that out loud. And then rounding up the schedule for what we have so far is Redis wanted to come on from a couple years ago. We had him on in July 2017, but they said, well, they've changed. It's now an in-memory data structure store, uses database, cache, message broker, supports data structures such as strings, hashes, lists, sets, sorted sets with range queries, bitmaps. So basically data. It's a very, very quick data in-memory thing. Again, go to the homepage for this show, twit.tv/floss, in order to figure out who we've got coming up and what their schedule actually is. Again, if you have any other suggestions, please tell the project leader or the community coordinator to email me. And my email is right there on that page, merlin@stonehenge.com. We have a live stream at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time on Wednesdays at live.twit.tv. I'm not sure if we took any questions this week, but I can't remember. Yeah. Anyway, you can follow us at Floss Weekly on Twitter. You can follow me at Merlin, M-E-R-L-Y-N, on Twitter. I will be tomorrow through the end of the week. I'm going to be at Scale in Pasadena. So if you're in the Pasadena area, please come by. I have a BOF tomorrow night on Dart and Flutter. So please come by that if you want. I deliberately scheduled that so it's not the same time as any of their parties and things like that. So it should be pretty easy just to drop by. I don't actually have any speaking roles this year. I usually speak at Scale, but I missed the deadline. It just went whoosh right by me, and I went, oh, I didn't actually submit anything to the CFP. So I'm just being there as press. I'm representing Floss Weekly there and trying to look for some more guests for Floss Weekly. That's always my goal when I go to a conference. So anything you want to plug there, Aaron?
So if we're going to, well, first of all, everyone should go to Scale. Love Scale. It's a great conference. I wish I could go back. I haven't been there in a long time. So at some point, maybe next year, you and I can get together and do something at Scale. Cool. Maybe a panel or something like that. That would be fun. But speaking of conferences, we have our own conference. Benicia Makerspace puts on a conference. It's not really a conference. It's an event every year in the spring. And we just renamed it. It's called the Steam Discovery Festival this year. So if you go to steamdiscoveryfestival.com, you can find out more about it. If you're anywhere in the Bay Area and you want to participate, of course, you can attend the event, right? But you can also actually either sponsor the event if you work for a company that loves to sponsor hands-on learning, you know, technology-related events for the community. We would love that. You can volunteer or you can exhibit. If you have a project that you like to show off or something that would you think people would be interested in, or even if you don't think people would be interested, I guarantee you they will be. You know, go to steamdiscoveryfestival.com and sign up. It's April 27th from 10 to 4. If you're an exhibitor, if you're like an individual, you know, you just want to show off your project, there's no cost to exhibit. So definitely go there and check it out.
Cool. And Aaron, thanks once again for stepping up to the big microphone, especially the really nice microphone at the headquarters there. So that's pretty
cool. I
know.
I'm so spoiled. I get the nice comfy chair. I don't have to worry about Slack problems, you know, and John can come over and like tell me to, you know, fix my thing every year. I don't have to worry about that. So yeah, I'm very spoiled today to be in the studio.
Yeah, and hopefully my Wi-Fi didn't drop out too many times during the show, but I'm sort of limited to the 5 megabit up and down that the hotel provides. So kind of that's the way it is for the day. So, Aaron, thanks once again, and we'll see you all again next week at Floss Weekly.